Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Back in 1973, I read Erica Jong's Fear of Flying, and it changed a lot of my thinking, as it did for millions and millions of people. It was a worldwide bestseller. And here's a quote that fits right into our theme for the day, and this is from Fear of Flying, Erica Jong. I was not against marriage. I believed in it, in fact. It was necessary to have one best friend in a hostile world. Yet what about all those other longings, which after a while, marriage did nothing much to appease? Well, my guest is Brad Coates, and he knows a lot about marriage and divorce. Brad has been on this show many times, not since last summer, though, so I'm really glad to have you back. Hello, Bradley Coates.
Glad to be back, Diana.
And your book, Divorce with Decency, has it been published in its fifth edition, or is it still on the verge?
Fifth edition comes out this spring.
Okay, so it's on the verge. But the fourth edition is out and selling very well. And so we're going to, since Brad knows all about marriage and divorce, the topics for today, he's a divorce lawyer. How many divorces have you in the firm that you founded? How many divorces have you handled over the past 30 years or so?
Way too many. I came into the Hawaii bar in 1978, and I've been practicing 39 years in the divorce field, and I personally have done probably about 8,000 or 9,000 divorces, and the firm that I run, 11 lawyers here at Coates and Frye, have probably done 30,000. I mean, it's crazy business. It's a crazy business.
But what I like about you, Bradley, is that you encourage marriages to stay together, and in fact, you have founded within your firm, I guess, Divorce with Decency mediation groups. Can you talk about that a little bit before we get into some of the statistics and things in your book?
Well,
go ahead.
Probably, vastly different than most divorce lawyers. I actually do try and, whenever I can, talk to the couple about trying to stay together. I wouldn't say that I've got a, high percentage success ratio. And it is kind of my partners drives them crazy because I'm, basically talking us out of business when I do succeed. But I don't run people right through divorces. I really try and see if there isn't a chance of trying to keep it together. And quite a bit of my book is devoted to various sort of yardsticks that you can apply to see whether marriages might work. And if we're not able to, keep them together, then we at least try to make it to end it in a way that's a little more civilized than the normal meat axe approach that divorce court takes. So it is, when people have to fight in a divorce context, it oftentimes makes the situation much, much worse, certainly for their children and oftentimes for them and horrible for their pocketbook. So, Divorce with Decency, we try and keep people married if we can, or at least if we got to undo it, we try and undo it in the most efficient and supportive way possible.
And I think that's such an ethical thing to do. I wanted to make a point, if we just rewind a little bit. And I think there's a reason fairy tales always end in marriage, that is, the two people getting married. And it's because nobody wants to see what comes after in a fairy tale, in a romantic movie, for example. It's often just too grim. But when in the courting process, meeting the right person, working through comic misunderstandings and overcoming family disapproval to get to the altar, those are often the stories worth telling. And plodding on year after year with the same old soul, that's often kind of boring. So we have lots of stories about what it is to court, but not so much talking about marriage and the marriage slump. Fewer Americans are married today, largely because fewer young people are tying the knot. And you have some very interesting stats in your book. And can we start to get into those, or what would
you? Sure.
Okay.
What I thought we might do today, when you've had me on before, we've gone on various chapters of the Divorce with Decency book that I wrote, and that, as you mentioned, is now in its fifth edition with University of Hawaii Press. And we talk about, how divorce impacts men or women, and, what about, sex dropping off, or what about children being an issue that makes it difficult to maintain marriages. That is the single biggest cause of divorce and second marriages, by the way, is trying to integrate the kids from the first marriage.
Of
it
course.
Doesn't always work out like the Brady Bunch on television.
No, it really doesn't. Children often get in the way of the marriage and the expectations. And children these days are not merely fed, educated, and sheltered. They're kind of curated. Family scholars put it this way: they're raised using concerted cultivation.
Interesting phrase.
Yes, I thought so too. So this intensive parenting is made more complicated, of course, when both spouses work outside of the home, which is occurring more and more.
So what I thought I would do at the end of my book, instead of going through it in various chapters, I thought I'd go right to some of the what I call the final miscellaneous factoids regarding love, marriage, and divorce that are found at the end of my book. And I thought I'd just spit out a few of them, and then we could maybe discuss them, and maybe your audience would get a kick out of hearing some of these legitimate statistics that really do kind of tell the tale of where marriage and divorce is headed in this new century. So the first one,
before you get into the first one, I wanted to announce that Bradley has agreed to give his book, which is an incredibly useful book, Divorce with Decency. The subtitle is The Complete How-To Handbook and Survivor's Guide to the Legal, Emotional, Economic, and Social Issues. And this fourth edition, which is available now, includes invaluable information on Can Your Marriage Be Saved and Love in the Internet Age. So Zach will give the book away to the first caller, and maybe the first caller calling 888-874-4888 can wait till maybe, half past the hour, just so that Brad Coates and I have time to establish some of the themes, and then you can ask a question that maybe is appropriate to what we've been talking about. How's that sound, Brad?
Perfect, and I'd be happy to donate a book, and I'm always happy when somebody reads this crazy book. It's gotten a lot of positive reviews. It's won awards and been a very successful book on the whole divorce process, and it's actually more than just about divorce. It really discusses the whole ebb and flow of the dynamics of relationships overall, romantic relationships. So it's well worth reading, and I hope somebody calls and collects it.
I do too, and you even go on cruise ships and lecture about how you can sustain a marriage and not have to go through what can be quite an emotional upheaval and
Indeed,
financial upheaval.
Indeed, I do.
Upheaval.
I lecture all over the place nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I've been lecturing so much that my voice is even a little hoarse today. You may notice that, but I can make it through an hour.
Okay, good.
So are you ready for my first statistic?
Absolutely ready. Mm-hmm.
There's been more than a 30% drop in marriages since 1970. So basically what that means is far, far fewer people are getting married than ever before. And that rate has dropped precipitously in the 2010 census. That was the first time that the number of unmarried adults in America had exceeded the number of married adults in America, and it has continued to spiral downward ever since. Kids who used to get married, I mean, when I was growing up, and probably you too, people you would graduate from college and marry their college girlfriend.
Yeah.
And certainly, if you wanted to have sex, you went ahead and married somebody just for that purpose alone. So needless to say, that has changed dramatically in the decades since you and I were in college. And nowadays, instead of getting married, you know, guys used to get married at age, 20, 24, women at 22. Now it's up to about 29 or 30 for guys and 28 for women. So it's a dramatically lengthened timeline before anybody's willing to tie the knot.
Yes, and some demographers have hypothesized that the reason marriage is most popular among the highly educated is that they see it as an optimal way to give advantage to their offspring. Because people that are highly educated usually postpone marriage, don't they? At least today.
And they stay in it. Once they get married, they stay married. You're exactly right. You've got a much higher likelihood of maintaining a marriage if you're from, sort of the upper half of society, highly educated, wealthy, and individuals that are in a position for, it's been shown conclusively that marriage is one of the best ways to accumulate wealth.
Yes.
Unless you have to come into my office and cut it in half and in divorce. But if you can stay married, no question, married couples accumulate more wealth than anybody else.
Yes.
So a lot of people, you're right, want to do it for themselves, to better themselves. They want to do it to better their children, chances in society. So it is, it is definitely a vehicle. If you can pull it off, it's a vehicle that's very good for society.
Yes, yes. So that leads you to another statistic in your book. And these stats do tell the story, and I know you love statistics.
I do, and this next one's a kind of a classic. It certainly displays the gender gap a bit. 36% of women surveyed said they would not marry their same husbands again. When they asked the same question of married men, only 12% admitted that they had picked the wrong wife.
So how do you interpret that, Brad?
Well, probably that, that 12% versus 36%, women are three times as unhappy as men in married life. And that is borne out in the statistics as to who files for divorce. You would think that, if each gender was equally unhappy about equal amounts of the time, that men would file for divorce half the time and women would file for divorce half the time. But that is not the case. Women file for fully two-thirds of the divorces throughout America. So women not only are not only maybe less satisfied with the situation, but they're more willing to act on that dissatisfaction. Guys may be equally unhappy, but they won't act on it. And according to this statistic, a lot of guys seem to be happier in their marriages than do women.
Yeah, say more about that. I think that's exactly right. But
guys have, it's been my experience, and again, I'm not just talking about, my own, I've had, 8,000 or 9,000 people come through my office and tell me their life story. So you'd have to be a total idiot to do this job the way I have for as long as I have and not glean some ideas out of it. What happens is that women will get divorced for all the quote right reasons. They will actually come into my office and say, I want a divorce, and I'll go, why? And they'll go, well, my husband and I don't communicate anymore. And if I ask a guy why he's getting divorced, I'm not sure guys even understand that they're supposed to communicate with. They put that in quotes, and they don't even know what that means. What is this that women talk about communication in a relationship? Well, it's really serious for women, guys, and women will literally act on that. They will act on the fact that they don't feel they're getting enough psychic fulfillment, enough of a partnership out of their marriage. They don't necessarily even have to have any other option or in some new guy in mind or anything like that. They just are not happy with the quality of the relationship in general. Whereas if a guy comes in and files for divorce and he's the first one to trigger it, it almost always, not always, but almost always will be as a result of a guy having had something going with some other woman and he wants to move on to some other gal. in a relationship. Either he's had an affair and she wants him to leave his wife, or, you know, he's excited about some new gal, whatever. But unless a guy's got a new woman waiting in the wings, he very rarely will file for divorce. My experience has been that as long as a guy can sit in his lazy boy lounger and watch sports on television and get fed three meals a day, you know, to him, that's a good marriage. Whereas for a woman, she's got much, much higher expectations and on areas that are much more serious psychologically.
Yes. I opened the show with a quote from Erica Jong, and part of that was marriage. It's because it's necessary to have one best friend in a hostile world. And certainly, if we can have a best friend in our spouse, communicate unconditionally, and have good sex, and it makes such a difference. And we'll get into sex, because we always like to talk about that, especially me. but yeah, women have a different gauge typically. And actually, your next...
A different and a higher standard. Women have a higher standard for what they expect out of relationships. Guys will just sort of drift along until maybe some other wahini pulls them out of it. And that, that's kind of pathetic if you're on behalf of we males.
I just have, for those who are not familiar with Hawaiian, Brad uses wahini often because he lives in Hawaii. Most of the time, and that means the woman. Wahini, woman. And in fact, the next stat that's in your book is 30% of American women who are married do not intend to be with a man they're with 5 years from now. That's kind of interesting.
That is interesting. And, you know, it may be, again, that women have got a higher standard and they're sort of feeling it's starting to slip. And unless things shift around, they're not going to stick around. Or it may be, you know, women who are, you know, women have to make much more serious choices in life than guys do. I mean, starting with the fact that every time they have sex, it could be the next 9 months of their life and then the next 18 years after that, whereas guys can just, you know, go right along to the next sexual encounter. Women have got to worry about, you know, whether they're going to have kids, raise kids, the big party guy that may have been a fun guy in their 20s, in his 20s, if he's not getting a job and can't put a roof over his family's head, the women are quick to analyze that situation and move on. Maybe women will stay married for another 5 years because they're waiting for their kids to graduate from school, whatever. But there's oftentimes a whole element of, you know, serious analysis and some serious planning that goes into it from the wahini side, the women's side, that is, you know, lacking in guys.
Yes. So a lot of guys, and I see this when I do marriage counseling, they need to get up to speed in terms of communication. And so sometimes I'll give them as homework assignments some communication exercises. And what so many women feel that they're lacking in the marriage from their partner is gratitude. And because I say to these couples, you know, you simply must show appreciation more often. So many relationships die from emotional undernourishment, and to be grateful, it's really important not to take the other person for granted.
That's an excellent point, and it gets lost on guys. Again, I'm, you know, probably if you got male listeners, they're going to be sick of hearing from me about it, because I don't want to always be blaming the guys. But
on these
relationship issues, women are more sensitive and more sensible, and they've done other studies that show that, you know, a guy tells his wife he loves her, you know, once a month or once a year or, you know, whatever, he thinks he's done it. He thinks he's communicated effectively that he really cares for her and that he's in a happy marriage, whereas a woman wants to hear that several times a day. So, and guys are just totally blind to that whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
Women, you know, guys don't, guys don't talk just to talk. You know, it's you know, if you look at what John Gray talks about, or some of these Dr. Gottman, some of these other people we've talked about that are therapists over the years. You know, women want to communicate, you know, just to really kind of, it's an expression of themselves. They want to talk around issues. They kind of want to just sort of, you know, get into a discussion. Guys are much more linear. They, you know, they just want to solve problems. They want to, you know, get this situation handled. And if they don't see an immediate linear point in trying to carry on a discussion, okay, I thought we discussed that already. I love you. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women, you know, they want to hear why and how long and, you know, what, you know, it's a whole different mindset of the female brain than the male brain. And, you know, we could do a whole separate show on that, but we got more quotes to plow through.
Yeah. But first, you mentioned John Gottman and he is, he's revered. He's done 40 years of research with his Love Lab, and he has some wonderful, amazing research. And what he says is that 75% of the time, couples are operating in a minefield of missed communications that can lead to unhappiness and conflict. That there are missed opportunities for connection. And that's bids for attention. He talks a lot about bids for attention. And he says, I wanted to quote, because this is relevant, and then we'll get to the next statistic. There's a classic book called by Harriet Lerner called The Dance of Anger. I think it was published maybe 35 years ago. And she says, when one person can't offer the olive branch, and the other can't accept it, when neither takes an initiative to change direction and de-escalate a fight, when criticism, contempt, and stonewalling take over, when negative comments and interactions outnumber positive ones, well, of course, the relationship is in big trouble. And you and I have talked about, well, John Gottman also talks about criticism, contempt, and stonewalling, but maybe that takes us too far afield from the statistics, although I think it's worth interjecting.
Well, one of the bottom lines in Gottman's research, and you and I both know it, but maybe your audience could stand to hear it again, he basically says that, you know, the single biggest indicator of whether a relationship is going to work or not is whether a husband is willing to follow the lead of his wife. I mean, it seems a little unfair from a gender standpoint, especially if you're a male, but Gottman's research has conclusively demonstrated that that's the single biggest key to success is a guy who's willing to, you know, sublimate himself to some degree, allow his wife to take the initiative and be willing to take that role rather than being the typical domineering husband. And that seems to be one of the main indicators.
Yeah, he's come around, I think, yes, he has. He's added on to that. His newest book is A Man's Guide to Women. And what he says is that men need to step up. So it figures into what you just said, which men need to allow the wife to take the lead. But also, he says, and a lot of therapists are agreeing with him, that men need to do more of the, he calls it emotional labor in a relationship, the work that goes into sustaining love, which usually falls to the women. So here's a quote from his book. What men do in a relationship is, by a large margin, the crucial factor that separates a great relationship from a failed one. So this is from his book, The Man's Guide to Women. This doesn't mean that a woman doesn't need to do her part, but the data proves that a man's actions are the key variable that determines whether a relationship succeeds or fails. So he's kind of, that's sort of the opposite of what he said several years ago.
And,
And actually your statistics as we go along, you say more and more men are globally, you write 38% of men don't do chores, but also one in five men with kids is a stay-at-home dad now. And men really are beginning to step up at home and value the work-life balance almost as much as women.
Well, they kind of have to. Yeah, you know, with the rise of feminism and then the rise of the earning capacity of females, you know, the reality of it is that it's totally leveled the playing field. I mean, you know, women are getting more advanced degrees, they're earning higher salaries, they're excelling across the board, and if anything, men seem to be falling behind. So, you know, it's become sort of mandatory for men to learn to get along in this new environment. They can't just be the cock of the walk anymore. They've got to be in touch with their more feminine side, or they're not going to be able to hold on to their gal, who's oftentimes the breadwinner.
Indeed. And that certainly gives the woman much more freedom. She's so different than it was even 20 years ago, especially 25, 30 years ago. And a woman now has her own retirement fund.
Sure.
She doesn't feel the need to stay if things are really awful.
I mean, a lot of people say it started with the birth control pill, and you know, and then progressed through a woman's lib. And you know, I mean, it's been a long-standing evolution for women to really take charge of society. It turns out they're better at a lot of stuff than guys are. So
yes.
It's almost turning into a role reversal. So guys are probably having to get with the program if they want to stay married.
So any of you listeners, if you want to join the conversation, if you have a question or a comment, and you'd like to win Bradley Coates' book, Divorce with Decency, call 888-874-4888. You'll talk to Zach, our wonderful producer, and then you'll want to stay on the line after you're on the air so that we can get your address so that Brad can send you the book. He's in Hawaii, but the American Mail, M-A-I-L, works very well from Hawaii. I know I used to live there. I miss paradise a lot, Brad. And you and I are buddies going back to, almost 20 years now. Yeah.
Yep. Been a long time. First edition of my book, as I recall, yeah.
Yeah, I had you on I had a radio show then. Some of the listeners know this, some don't. And I read about you in the Honolulu Advertiser. And I said, he sounds like a great guest for my show. And you were. And that was the first edition of your book. So that was like 1998, I think.
And we're not done yet.
Right. Right. It'll keep you young. You know, it's very important to stay engaged in life, isn't it? With things that matter.
I can't imagine doing it any other way.
Exactly.
So are you ready for another quote?
I am.
Okay, 40% of all couples are estimated to be simply coexisting in unhappy marriages. That, you know, that probably ties in with the divorce rate of, you know, everybody hears about the divorce rate of half of all marriages end in divorce. It's actually, it breaks down a little tighter than that. About 45% of first marriages end in divorce. About 65% of second marriages end in divorce. And fully 85% of third marriages end in divorce. So I don't know where they get their 40% of all couples being unhappy, but you know there is probably a fair amount of uneasy coexistence rather than outright love and affection in marriages. I mean, a lot of people are married because of economics or responsibility for the kids, or they haven't got any better ideas, or you know somebody's a good cook, I know you have other criteria like bedroom skills as well as cooking that you like to think about. But I think there's probably a fair number of married couples that have abandoned the bedroom skills in exchange for cooking and cleaning and, peaceful coexistence and, some level of communication, I guess, But it's very hard to sustain that over a long period of time, to stay to sustain the hot to trot. We're still courting, we're still having date night, we're still, you know, doing all the fun stuff where we just love each other like we did when we were in high school. It's hard to do that when you're 60 years old.
It is, and
but not impossible.
But it's not impossible. And this is an era when it's both harder and less necessary to stay together. So what we're talking about is figuring out how to go the distance.
Yep.
so that the couple can reap rich rewards that have to do with better health and more money and more emotional satisfaction and sexual satisfaction, too. Are we up to the statistic yet where we talk about sex? I can hardly wait.
I know. Well, what you said about where, you know, it's less necessary to stay married, that leads to another statistic. 51% of all American women were living single as of 2006. 51% of all American women. I see this all the time. When I see guys, it's not true just only in my caseload, but it's true in all the follow-up studies, a guy will get divorced, and he'll be remarried inside of, you know, sometimes a year, 2 years, 3 years, which may have something to do with the fact that I mentioned earlier that the reason he's getting divorced in the first place may be because he already had something else online or some other gal in mind. But guys need the institution of marriage, women less and less. So guys will get married right away, remarried right away, and women sometimes, you know, many, many more years later, if at all. And a lot of my older women, they say, the clients, they say, hey, I wouldn't get married again if you paid me. So
I know. So you have.
And that's
many.
Taken. I read an article in about single women in Britain called Free Males, women that are just free of males altogether. You know, it's across the board. It's a common view amongst women that they're not dying to jump back into a relationship, or at least a marital relationship, whereas guys, like I say, they can't live without it. A lot of them need the cooking and cleaning and the sex and the whatever, you know, the companionship. They can't take care of themselves. I don't know what all they need, but the guys are not nearly as happy staying single as women are.
One recent study that I thought was fascinating in this regard is that older couples, if they had a happy marriage, they were definitely healthier. But in unhappy marriages, the man depended on the woman so much that it was better for him to stay with her, even in an unhappy marriage. And it was better for him than, say, if he got diabetes or something like that, to stay in an unhappy marriage, which, of course, the overflow for the woman is she's not going to be happy. And women are much more sensitive to this, as you've indicated from some of your, what you say, and also the statistics.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I mean, women, women need men less than guys need women. And if you think about the way that evolves, it's true, really, you know, it gets more true in later life, but it starts, you know, early on. You know, if you look at what male friendships are rooted in, oftentimes it's the sport. They were on the same sports team in high school, or in the same fraternity in college, or when their business career, they went from junior partner to senior partner in a business, and their closest friends were oftentimes their professional colleagues, and then they retire and all that goes away. All of a sudden the standard formations that guys used to do their socialization within disappear, and guys that are out there at 60 years old, 65 years old, you know, they're not playing football anymore. They're not in the fraternity house anymore. They're not employed and going, you know, hanging out with their business buddies. They're just having to, you know, face life on their own, and they really are kind of lost puppies in the process. Whereas women have always had different social groups that were much more expansive. I mean, they've had junior league, they've had, you know, PTA, they've had book clubs, they've had, you know, all kinds of different areas that kept them socialized over the years in a way that men didn't have those kind of linkages. And so, you know, when guys are out there on their own, they're uncomfortable, whereas women are pretty comfortable.
Yes, and, you know, that's also reflected when in the grief process. If a spouse dies, many times, and this is probably contributes to the higher rate for remarriage among men, of course, you're talking about after divorce, but I think after death, too, men generally, you know, we're making some generalizations here, Brad, but have a more difficult time grieving. They don't have the support system that women have, and they don't, it's harder for them to be in touch with their feelings. And you were there in Hawaii when Charlie, my late husband, died, and I really grieved fully. I turned down a friend, a pediatrician friend's offer for Prozac because I wanted to go through the whole process and, you know, completely live all of the feelings and go through them. Now, divorce is like a death, and we even had a show around this, but divorce is like a death because it's the death of hopes and expectations, and so you have to grieve it. And generally speaking, women are better at this than men.
I couldn't agree more. No, there's no question about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right. Are we ready to move into the realm of sexuality?
Because, yeah, I knew you wouldn't leave off of that for too long.
Well, the
okay.
First, the well, you also have a nice little statistic that a passionate kiss burns about 9 calories. And then you say, where else do you talk about sex?
Well, I got a couple of them. There, you know, there's a yeah. statistic about that middle-aged couples, i.e. 50-somethings, you know, sort of the boomer generation, make love an average of about once a week.
Yeah.
And that at any given moment, 1 in 4 persons is daydreaming about sex. And I don't have a quote about it, but men apparently fantasize and daydream about sex far more often than women do. So you're the sexpert. You know, you tell me. Do you think that sounds about right? That once a week is about average, or that you know that guys are dreaming about it more than women, or
no,
you know,
that's
what's
accurate.
Been your experience?
That is accurate, and it's really I encourage. I see so many couples, and of course they're coming to me. They know that I'm a marriage and family therapist, but they come because I'm also a board-certified sex therapist, and I say how important it is to be lovers. Never give up on sex. And, you know, because intimacy is a balm, a connector, a place of surprise even. It's self-care with help. And most importantly, it can be a redirection of tension into pleasure. And also, you know, it's if you don't have much money, it's entertainment too. It can be built-in entertainment.
That's good. I like that. Well, you know,
yes.
You know, most of your audience probably is, you know, gets the impression that I just, you know, bash guys all the time about, you know, not having been sensitive enough to their woman's needs. And that's, I think that's important if you want to keep a marriage together. But I think this is one area where there's a little bit of gender reversal, and I'd be curious to know what you think, Diana.
Yes.
It seems to me that it is more frequent that a woman will kind of tire of the sexual activity in a marriage or relationship, whereas guys, you know, don't seem to ever tire of it. I mean, a guy, you know, guys seem to constantly want sex in one capacity or another, whereas women, I'll get male clients that'll come in and say, you know, yeah, she stopped letting me make love to her, you know, years ago, and rarely do you hear a gal come in, and not never. Because some guys have erectile dysfunction in other areas. I get women that say, hey, you know, I don't feel like he's, you know, he's interested in me. And, you know, and I think he's the one that's lost his mojo sexually. But it seems that that it's a dangerous, slippery slope for women to assume that sex is less important in relationships, because I think for guys, as a general rule, it stays more important. What do you think about that?
I think that there's a lot of truth to that, that for guys it stays more important. I'm going to give a brief answer to this because we do have a caller. Sex, it turns out there's when, well, these were the good old Canadians. They often do a lot of good sex research, and including Amy Muse and some others. So they analyzed data from three different studies that found that sex played an even bigger role than money in happiness. And the difference, this is so interesting to me, the difference in life satisfaction between couples who had sex once a week and those who had it less than once a month was bigger than the difference between those who had an annual income of $50,000 to $75,000 and those who had an annual income between $15,000 and $25,000. So
that's interesting.
That's very interesting. So let's go to our caller. Hello there. You're on the air, hopefully.
Hi, this is Nicole. I had a question. I was wondering if you could speak on how much of a role, if any, should family, the family of a couple be involved in that couple's life. Just a little background. I came from a single parent home. My parents divorced when I was 10. So in my relationship, I kind of cringe at even my family being semi involved. I mean, I'm not older, and I'm 29. I've been in a relationship for 5 years, but I just was wondering if you have any information on that, or if you could speak on that a little.
Well, that can be the issue. It's probably one of the, in the talks I give, I talk about some of the key causes for divorce, and I talk about them being almost like the soap opera themes. One is sex, either too much, maybe too much outside the marriage or too little within it, or, you know, between the couple themselves. Money, again, too much or too little. And family is the next one. It can work tremendous positives if you get a family like a lot of what we have here in Hawaii. We have what's called Ohana style family rearing, where grandparents oftentimes help raise the kids. But it can really backfire if you get nosy relatives starting to tell you what to do, or a lot of times for economic reasons people have had to move back in and into their in-laws' houses. It can be great if you got the right in-laws, and it can be a disaster if you got the wrong ones. Just the whole decisions about family, period, whether to have kids, how to raise them, do you want to be a helicopter parent, do you want a private school, they take piano, or do they take violin? Those are all issues that can be flashpoints in marriage. And then sometimes you get the grandparents, I'll pay for private schooling, but only if, I get to, pick the curriculum, or I want to be involved in your kids, in you raising your kids. My wife is Japanese, and we've got a huge issue they've got a huge issue in Japan of Japanese women literally refusing to marry Japanese guys, because in their traditional culture, they've got to literally move into the husband's family home a lot of the time and take, I won't say excrement or whatever, take grief from the the mother-in-law. And a lot of these women, these young, highly educated Japanese women, they refuse to put themselves into that situation. They will not marry the Japanese guys. A lot of them come over here to Hawaii, and, they'd rather marry a surf bum from Hawaii than to marry somebody from Japan. I don't know if that answers your question, and maybe you could describe a little bit more about what you've gone through, but those are definite, those are definite trajectories.
Oh, really briefly, I'd like to add that I came to the same conclusion myself. My grandmother raised me mostly, and I love her to death, but She never loved herself, always had issues with her mother, and I think they just have, I think she unconsciously, and I have unconsciously, have taken these things upon myself. So this is not the first time I've called, and I've been listening to Diane, and she kind of knows a little bit about me, but I'm working through these things. So I absolutely agree. If you have healthy in-laws who know themselves and are progressive and proactive and are give you a loving, nurturing, and want to be that way for your grandchild or, you know, your child that you have, then it'll work out. If not, I think limits, healthy limits are what's best. But thank you. This is a great show. I'm going to keep listening.
Thank you so much for your call again, Nicole. You have much to offer. I would just like to add to your question about the grandmother, the different generations, and then Brad's comment, that I look at adult relationships through the lens of attachment theory. And so if I'm going to guess, well, just for the sake of my discussion, let's assume that your grandmother was an anxious woman, and no doubt her mother, so that would be your great-grandmother, was also anxious. And sometimes, then you get anxious attachment, and sometimes the anxious mother or mother figure then conveys anxiety to her child or to her grandchild, and is even overprotective and doesn't allow for enough exploration of the world. And then in Japan, oh my goodness, there are so many other overlays on all of that. Maybe a bossy in-law, would you say, Brad?
Yeah.
Someone who really wants to run the show, but sometimes that comes out of anxiety too. You know, if you feel in control, then there's oftentimes less anxiety. And that often can manifest in one's sex life too, but that's a whole nother way to go. Anyway, thank you, Nicole. You'll get Brad's book, Divorce with Decency. It's got you're in a relationship and not divorced, but as I promised, you're going to get so much information from this book on how to enhance your relationship. So it'll be good for you.
Diane, thank you so much. I just want to say, though, I feel really bad because I've been consistently calling here, and I feel like I'm the only one calling, but if I get the book, you send me these books, I will be sure to pass them on or find someone who can also really flourish.
Well, that's great, Nicole. No,
yeah.
Listen, you're brave and you're willing to come on the air, and nobody else was calling, so it's fine. It's fine, and you're getting some books, some free books, and passing it along. So that's great, and I appreciate.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Hello, Nicole.
Oh, bye bye.
Bye. What were you going to say? She can hear you off the air.
No, I was just going to say aloha to her and thanks for the call. I'll be happy to send her a book. And
yeah.
I think I'm back on. If I'm not mistaken, I think we picked April 18th as a time when I come back on.
Yes.
And maybe Nicole can call back in and tell me what she thinks of the book. I'd be curious to hear.
Oh, there's a great idea. Yes, Nicole, do mark your calendar because Brad will be on April the 18th. And, of course, with this program, it is archived generally by the next morning. And lots of people, and including many of my clients, because they'll tell me, oh, I listen to your, well, then by then it's a podcast. We have the advantage of Nicole listening live, so she's able to call in. So, great. So, Brad, we have enough time left to talk a little bit more about some of your statistics in the book.
Here's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, again, this may be something that's more up your wheelhouse than mine. The average person falls in love 7 times before marriage. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, I mean, sure. And especially they fall in love, and especially since people are waiting longer to get married these days.
Right.
And so it's, and I think it's a fallacy to believe that there's one person, one soulmate for every person. And that's just not true. Not true. There can be any number of people.
I couldn't agree more, and I don't know where that myth comes from. It's ridiculous.
Well,
I mean, if you're an open person who's skilled at communicating, ask some if you listen to Diana Wiley's show and you develop some of your sexual skills and you're empathetic to the other gender and you're open to experiences, shoot, why not fall in love as often as you damn well please?
Yes, and I've had different chapters in my life based on events, including a divorce, including the death of a spouse, and now I've been engaged to an incredible man and with him 6.5 years. And so far, we don't intend to get married. We're just really, and yet he would be, I could call him a soulmate. I could call him many things, but that are all good and positive. But lots of older people are not getting married. I think there are lots of reasons for that. I did want to say there are to avoid contempt, which is something that often leads to divorce, because it sets off a lethal chain reaction, and it absolutely kills vulnerability. And vulnerability is a prerequisite for intimacy, no doubt, because without intimacy, commitment is a grind, and so. How to avoid these things. Gary Chapman is arguably the country's most successful marriage therapist. His book, The Five Languages of Love, Love Languages, has been on the New York Times bestseller list for 8 straight years. That's incredible, isn't it? 8 years
he's been... Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and so... So the way you can avoid contempt and having too much familiarity, right, is first of all to figure out what specifically makes your partner feel loved. And according to Chapman, it's probably one of 5 things: words, time, kindly acts, sex, or gifts. And the other, and this is so important, and you talk about this, is to learn to apologize. Learn to apologize properly and to forgive. And to forgive. People have a lot of trouble with that. Saying, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Yes. And do you ever get people in your office that just don't, who seem, I bet a lot, but who can't seem to forgive?
Oh, by the time they get to my office, if they're ready to get divorced, they're past the apology stage a lot of the time. And you're right, it would be better if they would, if they would work that back into their repertoire somehow. But there's a lot of venom by the time they get to my office. I try and work it out, but get rid of it. But it's amazing how people want to. And there's an interesting aspect to the way that plays out in a divorce lawyer's office. You've heard of the 80-20 rule that applies to so many things in life. I would say that this firm, which is known for settling cases fast and economically here in Honolulu, we probably settle 80% of our cases, and it probably makes us only about 20% of the money for the firm. And the 20% that we don't settle, that go all the way to an expensive court trial and get stuck in the judicial process, they probably make us 80% of our money. So people just literally, they oftentimes want to play out a failed marriage, through their divorce lawyer. And it's like I say, it's lucrative for divorce lawyers, but it is horrible as far as, the humans involved. And what's really horrible is an awful lot of lawyers deliberately play off of that and encourage it instead of discouraging it.
Oh, and yes.
Everybody's got something to apologize for. nobody's 100% right. Everybody would benefit by being, you know, admitting certain aspects of their own issues and dealing with them, and people just won't do it.
Well, that's right, and it takes a lot of maturity. And I know, Bradley, that you do send some of your clients to marriage counselors, to mediators.
Oh, all the time. Yep.
And back when I lived there, and even after I moved away, you sent me one or two of your clients. 'Cause the person has a good chance with you to work it through, but even, I would like to think, even a better chance where the feelings can really be discussed and the dynamics and the expectations. You know, we have, lots of people have expectations that the partner will meet everything for them. Everything.
Yeah, right.
And talking and laughing keep couples together, and shared goals keep couples together. And I think if this were not true, how would some couples survive illnesses or deaths of beloved family members, or even
shared
Holocaust?
Shared goals going forward and shared marital history going backward. I frequently tell people, you know, go back, keep diaries of, you know, your first trip to Europe, you know, your first, I mean, relive some of the good times and stay cognizant of your marital history and review it and imbue it as part of your whole program. And I think it's very important.
Yes, that is to do that kind of review. In my office, I'll ask them about the early days, and that's another way of saying going back, because I want to find out if there's enough of a foundation to build on, especially sexually. Sometimes they're so estranged from each other that they haven't had sex in years, and that's pretty much a death knell, unless they can get back on track. And some do. But we do. Oh, there's our music. So everybody, I'll put up Brad Coates' website, and he'll be back April the 18th. Thank you, Brad, for being on the program once again.
Thanks for having me. And if you can email me Nicole's address or have Zach do it, I will gladly send her a book, and I'll see everybody on the 18th.
Great. Thanks again, Brad. And remember what Mark Twain said, to get the full value of joy, you must have somebody to divide it with. Goodbye, everybody. Next week is Valentine's Day. I have a special guest who will surprise you. Bye-bye.
Happy feet. Da-da-da. Happy feet. Da-da-da. Happy feet. Oh, oh, oh.